Good morning, and welcome to the Cory Doctorow podcast. I'm Cory Doctorow, and today I'm reading to you an excerpt from my forthcoming novel, Little Brother. It's a little early to be doing this, but I had a lot of fun doing this reading when I was in San Diego a couple of weeks ago. It went over really well, and I thought, wow, that was really good. I should read that for the podcast. So that's what I'm doing. This is my my long-discussed book on this podcast, Little Brother, about hacker kids who declare war on the Department of Homeland Security. It's coming from Tor Books in May 2008. It's a young adult novel, my first of those. And I'll just give you a little background so the story makes some sense to you. It's about a guy named Marcus, who it's told from his point of view, who is picked up along with his friends after terrorists blow up the Bay Bridge in San Francisco and accused of being a terrorist and actually tortured along with some of his friends, and one of whom is never released. And in the wake of this, he decides to declare war on the Department of Homeland Security and raises a kind of guerrilla army of what he calls jammers, who are people who kind of mess up the security. They clone RFID tags and cause false positives. They just kind of fool with the DHS security, and they use a network called the XNet to do it. The XNet is made up of rogue wireless hacked Xbox universals, a theoretical model of the Xbox that comes out some years from now that Microsoft gives away for free in order to sell you games. And they have broken the firmware and loaded something called Paranoid Linux on it that sets up an encrypted wireless network base that you can run anonymous blogs and other tools on top of it. So that's kind of the background for the story. This reading's a little different from the other ones I've done in that I've done some sound effects and sound editing. Usually I just kind of slap it up on the internet, but I had a really fun morning doing a little editing. I had some time this week, and so I pulled out Audacity, which is the free sound editing program that runs on Linux and Mac and Windows, and I downloaded a ton of free samples from something called the Free Sound Project, which has Creative Commons licensed samples. And I asked my friend Heath Rowe if I could use his band, a couple of samples from his band, the Anchormen, great punk rock band, and just spend a day just mixing. I won't pretend that this is perfect, but it was fun as anything, and really creatively satisfying. I hope you like it. Just one more note. Next week, I'm going to read to you from my novella, Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow. There's a Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, Now is the Best Time of Your Life, my novella about futurism. So with that, I'll just cut over to the reading. Hope you enjoy it. People started to drift into Dolores Park through the long Saturday afternoon, showing up among the ultimate frisbee players and dog walkers. Some of them played frisbee and walked dogs. It wasn't really clear how the concert was going to work, but there were a lot of cops and undercovers hanging around. You could tell the undercovers because, like Zit and Booger, they had Castro haircuts and Nebraska physiques, tubby guys with short hair and untidy mustaches. They drifted around, looking awkward and uncomfortable in their giant shorts and loose-fitting shirts that no doubt hung down to cover the chandelier of gear hung around their midriffs. Dolores Park is pretty and sunny, with palm trees, tennis courts, and lots of hills and regular trees to run around on or hang out on. Homeless people sleep there at night, but that's true of everywhere in San Francisco. I met Ange down the street at the anarchist bookstore. That had been my suggestion. In hindsight, it was a totally transparent move to seem cool and edgy to this girl. But at the time, I would have sworn that I picked it because it was a convenient place to meet up. She was reading a book called Up Against the Wall, Motherfucker, when I got there. Nice, I said. You kiss your mother with that mouth? Your mama don't complain, she said. Actually, it's a history of a group of people like the Yippies, but from New York. They all used Motherfucker as their last names, like Ben Motherfucker. The idea was to have a group out there making news, but with totally unprintable names, just to screw around with the news media. Pretty funny, really. She put the book back on the shelf, and now I wondered if I should hug her. People in California hug to say hello and goodbye all the time, except when they don't. and sometimes they kiss on the cheek. It's all very confusing. She settled it for me by grabbing me in a hug and tugging my head down to her, kissing me hard on the cheek, then blowing a fart on my neck. I laughed and pushed her away. "You want a burrito?" I asked. "Is that a question or a statement of the obvious?" "Neither," I said. "It's an order." I bought some funny stickers that said, "This phone is tapped," which were the right size to put on the receivers of the payphones that still line the streets of the Mission, it being the kind of neighborhood where you got people who couldn't necessarily afford a cell phone. We walked out into the night air. I told Ange about the scene at the park when I left. "I bet they have 100 of those trucks parked around the block," she said. "The better to bust you with." I looked around. I sort of hoped you would say something like, there's no chance they'll do anything about it." "I don't think that's really the idea. The idea is to put a lot of civilians in a position where the cops have to decide, are we going to treat these ordinary people like terrorists? It's a little like the jamming, but with music instead of gadgets. You jam, right?" "Sometimes I forget that all my friends don't know that Marcus and Mikey are the same person." "Yeah, a little," I said. "This is like jamming, but with a bunch of awesome bands." "I see." Mission burritos are an institution. They are cheap, giant, and delicious. Imagine a tube the size of a bazooka shell, filled with spicy grilled meat, guacamole, salsa, tomatoes, refried beans, rice, onions, and cilantro. It has the same relationship to Taco Bell that a Lamborghini has to a Hot Wheels car. There are about 200 Mission burrito joints. They're all heroically ugly, with uncomfortable seats, minimal decor, faded Mexican tourist office posters and electrified framed Jesus and Mary holograms, and loud mariachi music. The thing that distinguishes them, mostly, is what kind of exotic meat they'll fill their wares with. The really authentic places have brains and tongue, which I never order, but it's nice to know they're there. The place we went to had both brains and tongue, which we didn't order. I got carne asada, and she got shredded chicken, and we each got a big cup of horchata. As soon as we sat down, she unrolled her burrito and took a little bottle out of her purse. It was a little stainless steel aerosol canister that looked for all the world like a pepper spray self-defense unit. She aimed it at her burrito's exposed guts and misted them with a fine, red, oily spray. I caught a whiff of it and my throat closed and my eyes watered. "What the hell are you doing to that poor defenseless burrito?" She gave me a wicked smile. "I'm a spicy food addict," she said. "This is capsaicin oil, in a mister." "Capsaicin? Yeah, you know, the stuff in pepper spray. This is like pepper spray, but slightly more dilute, and way more delicious. Think of it as spicy Cajun Visine, if it helps." My eyes burned just thinking of it. "You're kidding," I said. "You are so not going to eat that." Her eyebrows shot up. "That sounds like a challenge, Sonny. You just watch me." She rolled the burrito up as carefully as a stoner rolling up a joint, tucking the ends in, then re-wrapping it in tinfoil. She peeled off one end and brought it up to her mouth, poised with it just before her lips. Right up until the time she bit into it, I couldn't believe that she was going to do it. I mean, that was basically an anti-personnel weapon she just slathered on her dinner. She bit into it, chewed, swallowed, gave every impression of having a delicious dinner. "Want a bite?" she said, innocently. "Yeah," I said. "I like spicy food. I always order the curries with 4 chilies next to them on the menu at the Pakistani places." I peeled back more foil and took a big bite. Big mistake. You know that feeling you get when you take a big bite of horseradish or wasabi or whatever, and it feels like your sinuses are closing at the same time as your windpipe, filling your head with trapped, nuclear hot air that tries to batter its way out through your watering eyes and nostrils? That feeling like steam is about to pour out of your ears like a cartoon character? This was a lot worse. This was like putting your hand on a hot stove, only it's not your hand, it's the entire inside of your head and your esophagus, all the way down to your stomach. My entire body sprang out in a sweat, and I choked and choked. Wordlessly, she passed me my horchata, and I managed to get the straw into my mouth and suck hard on it, gulping down half of it in one go. So there's a scale, the Scoville scale, that we chili fanciers use to talk about how spicy a pepper is. Pure capsaicin is about 15 million Scovilles. Tabasco is about 2,500. Pepper spray's a healthy 3 million. This stuff is a puny 100,000, about as hot as a mild Scotch bonnet pepper. I worked up to it in about a year. Some of the real hardcores can get up to a 500,000 or so, 20 times hotter than Tabasco. That's pretty freaking hot. At Scoville temperatures like that, your brain gets totally awash in endorphins. It's a better body stone than hash, and it's good for you. I was getting my sinuses back now, able to breathe without gasping. Of course, you get a ferocious ring of fire when you go to the John, she said, winking at me. Youch. You are insane, I said. Fine talk from a man whose hobby is building and smashing laptops, she said. Touché, I said, and touched my forehead. Want some? She held out her mister. Pass, I said, quickly enough that we both laughed. When we left the restaurant and headed for Dolores Park, she put her arm around my waist, and I found that she was just the right height for me to put my arm around her shoulders. That was new. I'd never been a tall guy, and the girls I dated had all been my height. Teenage girls grow faster than guys, which is a cruel trick of nature. It was nice. It felt nice. We turned the corner on 20th Street and walked up toward Dolores. Before we'd taken a single step, we could feel the buzz. It was like the hum of a million bees. There were lots of people streaming toward the park, and when I looked toward it, I could see that it was about 100 times more crowded than it had been when I went to meet Ange. The sight made my blood run hot. It was a beautiful, cool night, and we were about to party, really party, party like there was no tomorrow. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die. Without saying anything, we both broke into a trot. There were lots of cops, with tense faces, but what the hell were they going to do? There were a lot of people in the park. I'm not so good at counting crowds. The papers later quoted organizers as saying there were 20,000 people. The cops said 5,000. Maybe that means there were 12,500. Whatever. It was more people than I'd ever stood among, as part of an unscheduled, unsanctioned, illegal event. We were among them in an instant. I can't swear to it, but I don't think there was anyone over 25 in that press of bodies. Everyone was smiling. Some young kids were there, 10 or 12, and that made me feel better. No one would do anything too stupid with kids that little in the crowd. No one wanted to see little kids get hurt. This was just going to be a glorious spring night of celebration. I figured the thing to do was push in towards the tennis courts. We threaded our way through the crowd, and to stay together, we took each other's hands. Only, staying together didn't require us to intertwine fingers. That was strictly for pleasure. It was very pleasurable. The bands were all inside the tennis courts, with their guitars and mixers and keyboards, even a drum kit. Later on XNet, I found a Flickr stream of them smuggling all this stuff in, piece by piece, in gym bags, and under their coats. Along with it all were huge speakers, the kind you see in automotive supply places, and among them, a stack of... car batteries! I laughed. Genius! That was how they were going to power their stacks. From where I stood, I could see that they were cells from a hybrid car, a Prius. Someone had gutted an Ecomobile to power the night's entertainment. The batteries continued outside the courts, stacked up against the fence, tethered to the main stack by wires threaded through the chain link. I counted. 200 batteries. Christ, those things weighed a ton, too. There's no way they organized this without email and wikis and mailing lists, and there's no way people this smart would have done that on the public internet. This had all taken place on the XNet. I'd bet my boots on it. We just kind of bounced around in the crowd for a while as the bands tuned up and conferred with one another. I saw Trudy Dew from a distance in the tennis courts. She looked like she was in a cage, like a pro wrestler. She was wearing a torn wife beater and her hair was in long, fluorescent pink dreads down to her waist. She was wearing army camouflage pants and giant gothy boots with steel overtoes. As I watched, she picked up a heavy motorcycle jacket, worn as a catcher's mitt, and put it on like armor. It probably was armor, I realized. I tried to wave to her, to impress Ange, I guess, but she didn't see me, and I kind of looked like a spaz, so I stopped. The energy in the crowd was amazing. You hear people talk about vibes and energy for big groups of people, but until you've experienced it, you probably think it's just a figure of speech. It's not. It's the smiles, infectious and big as watermelons, on every face, everyone bopping a little to an unheard rhythm, shoulders rocking. Rolling walks, jokes and laughs, the tone of every voice tight and excited, like a firework about to go off, and you can't help but be a part of it, because you are. By the time the bands kicked off, I was utterly stoned on crowd vibe. The opening act was some kind of Serbian turbo folk, which I couldn't figure out how to dance to. I know how to dance to exactly two kinds of music, trance, shuffle around and let the music move you, and punk, bash around and mosh until you get hurt or exhausted, or both. The next act were Oakland hip-hoppers, backed by a thrash metal band, which is better than it sounds. Then some bubblegum pop. Then Speed Horse took the stage, and Trudy Do stepped up to the mic. "My name is Trudy Do, and you're an idiot if you trust me. I'm 32, and it's too late for me. I'm lost. I'm stuck in the old way of thinking. I still take my freedom for granted and let other people take it away from me. You're the first generation to grow up in Gulag America, and you know what your freedom is worth to the last goddamn cent." The crowd roared. She was playing fast little skittery nervous chords on her guitar, and her bass player, a huge fat girl with a dykey haircut and even bigger boots and a smile you could open beer bottles with, was laying it down fast and hard already. I wanted to bounce. I bounced. Ange bounced with me. We were sweating freely in the evening, which reeked of perspiration and pot smoke. Warm bodies crushed in on all sides of us. They bounced, too. "Don't trust anyone over 25, she shouted. We roared. We were one big animal throat roaring. Don't trust anyone over 25. 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 She banged some hard chords on her guitar, and the other guitarist, a little pixie of a girl whose face bristled with piercings, jammed in, going wheedledy 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 up high past the 12th fret. "It's our goddamn city. It's our goddamn country. No terrorist can take it from us as long as we're free. Once we're not free, the terrorists win. Take it back. Take it back. You're young enough and stupid enough not to know that you can't possibly win, so you're the only ones who can lead us to victory. Take it back. Take it back," we roared. She jammed down hard on her guitar. We roared the note back to her, and then it got really loud. I danced until I was so tired that I couldn't dance another step. Ange danced alongside of me. Technically, we were rubbing our sweaty bodies against each other for several hours, but believe it or not, I totally wasn't being a horn dog about it. We were dancing, lost in the godbeat and the thrash and the screaming, "Take it back, take it back, take it back!" When I couldn't dance anymore, I grabbed her hand and she squeezed mine like I was keeping her from falling off a building. She dragged me toward the edge of the crowd where it got thinner and cooler. Out there, on the edge of Dolores Park, we were in the cool air and the sweat on our bodies went instantly icy. She shivered and she threw her arms around my waist. "Warm me," she commanded. I didn't need a hint. I hugged her back. Her heart was an echo of the fast beats from the stage, breakbeats now, fast and furious and wordless. She smelled of sweat, a sharp tang that smelled great. I knew I smelled of sweat, too. My nose was pointed into the top of her head, and her face was right at my collarbone. She moved her hands to my neck and tugged. "Get down here. I didn't bring a stepladder," is what she said, and I tried to smile, but it's hard to smile when you're kissing. Like I said, I'd kissed three girls in my life. Two of them had never kissed anyone before. One had been dating since she was 12. She had issues. None of them kissed like Ange. She made her whole mouth soft, like the inside of a ripe piece of fruit, and she didn't jam her tongue in my mouth, but slid it in there and sucked my lips into her mouth at the same time, so it was like my mouth and hers were merging. I heard myself moan, and I grabbed her and squeezed her harder. Slowly, gently, we lowered ourselves to the grass. We lay on our sides and clutched each other, kissing and kissing. The world disappeared so that there was only the kiss. My hands found her butt, her waist, the edge of her t-shirt, her warm tummy, her soft navel. My hands inched higher. She moaned, too. "Not here," she said. "Let's move over there." She pointed across the street at the big white church that gives Mission Dolores Park, and the mission its name. Holding hands, moving quickly, we crossed to the church. It had big pillars in front of it. She put my back up against one of them and pulled my face down to hers again. My hands went quickly and boldly back to her shirt. I slipped them up her front. "It undoes in the back," she whispered into my mouth. I had a boner that could cut glass. I moved my hands around to her back, which was strong and broad, and found the hook with my fingers, which were trembling. I fumbled for a while, thinking of all those jokes about how bad guys are at undoing bras. I was bad at it. Then the hook sprang free. She gasped into my mouth. I slipped my hands around, feeling the wetness of her armpits, which was sexy and not at all gross for some reason, and then brushed the sides of her breasts. That's when the sirens started. They were louder than anything I'd ever heard. A sound like a physical sensation, like something blowing you off your feet. A sound as loud as your ears could process. And then, louder.
"Disperse immediately,"
a voice said, like God rattling in my skull.
"This is an illegal gathering. Disperse immediately."
The band had stopped playing. The noise of the crowd across the street changed. It got angry, scared. I heard a click as the PA system of car speakers and car batteries in the tennis courts powered up. Take it back! It was a defiant yell, like a sound shouted into the surf or screamed off a cliff. Take it back! The crowd growled, a sound that made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. Take it back! They chanted. Take it back! The police moved in lines, carrying plastic shields, wearing Darth Vader helmets that covered their faces. Each one had a black truncheon and infrared goggles. They looked like soldiers out of some futuristic war movie. They took a step forward in unison, and every one of them banged his truncheon on his shield, a cracking noise like the earth splitting. Another step, another crack. They were all around the park and closing in now. The voice of God said again. There were helicopters overhead now. No floodlights, though. The infrared goggles, right, of course. They'd have infrared scopes in the sky, too. I pulled Ange back against the doorway of the church, tucking us back from the cops and the choppers. Take it back! The PA roared. It was Trudy Doo's rebel yell, and I heard a guitar thrash out some chords, then her drummer playing, then that big, deep bass. Take it back! The crowd answered, and they boiled out of the park at the police lines. I've never been in a war, but now I think I know what it must be like. What it must be like when the scared kids charge across a field at an opposing force, knowing what's coming, running anyway, screaming, hollering.
"Disperse immediately,"
the voice of God said. It was coming from trucks parked all around the park, trucks that had swung into place in the last few seconds. That's when the mist fell. It came out of the choppers, and we just caught the edge of it. It made the top of my head feel like it was going to come off. It made my sinuses feel like they were being punctured with ice picks. It made my eyes swell and water, and my throat close. Pepper spray. Not 100,000 Scovilles. 1.5 million. They'd gassed the crowd. I didn't see what happened next, but I heard it, over the sound of both me and Ange choking and holding each other. First the choking, retching sounds, the guitar and drums and bass crashed to a halt, then coughing, then screaming. The screaming went on for a long time. When I could see again, the cops had their scopes up on their foreheads, and the choppers were flooding Dolores Park with so much light that it looked like daylight. Everyone was looking at the park, which was good news, because when the lights went up like that, we were totally visible. "What do we do?" Ange said. Her voice was tight, scared. I didn't trust myself to speak for a moment. I swallowed a few times. "We walk away," I said. "That's all we can do. Walk away, like we were just passing by, down to Dolores and turn left and up towards 16th Street, like we were just passing by, like this is none of our business." "That'll never work," she said. "It's all I've got." "You don't think we should try and run for it?" "No," I said. "If we run, they'll chase us. Maybe if we walk, they'll figure out we haven't done anything and let us alone. They have a lot of arrests to make. They'll be busy for a long time." The park was rolling with bodies, people and adults clawing at their faces and gasping. The cops dragged them by the armpits, then lashed their wrists with plastic cuffs and tossed them into the trucks like rag dolls. "Okay," I said. "Okay," she said. And that's just what we did. Walked holding hands, quickly and businesslike, like two people wanting to avoid whatever trouble someone else was making. The kind of walk you adopt when you want to pretend you can't see a panhandler or don't want to get involved in a street fight. It worked. We reached the corner and turned and kept going. Neither of us dared to speak for two blocks. Then I let out a gasp of air that I hadn't known I'd been holding in. We came to 16th Street and turned down toward Mission Street. Normally, that's a pretty scary neighborhood at 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. That night, it was a relief. The same old druggies and hookers and dealers and drunks. No cops with truncheons. No gasps. I said as we breathed in the night air. Coffee? Home, she said. I think home for now. Coffee later. Yeah, I agreed. She lived up in Hayes Valley. I spotted a taxi rolling by and I hailed it. That was a small miracle. There are hardly any cabs when you need them in San Francisco. Have you got cab fare home? Yeah, she said. The cab driver looked at us through his window. I opened the back door so he wouldn't take off. Good night, I said. She put her hands behind my head and pulled my face toward her. She kissed me hard on the mouth, nothing sexual in it, but somehow more intimate for that. Good night, she whispered in my ear and slipped into the taxi. Head swimming, eyes running, a burning shame for having left all those ex-netters to the tender mercies of the DHS and the SFPD, I set off for home.